Where are you boys headed?
Canada. We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sir.
Poutine.
Canada, huh? Almost made it.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You smell something, Rabbit?
Fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Look around the room. Find someone's eyes that are new to you. Might be a child or a grandfather. Anyone will do. Go say hello. How do you do? Listen to their answer. Commiserate. See, I feel that way sometimes too. And would you like to dance? And if they say no, that's okay. But if they say yes, take their hand.
Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show strictly talking hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. I'm Teebs. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
Good, good. Things are going well out there for weather, finally.
Definitely.
Been nice the last couple of days, so hopefully we'll keep this trend going for a while now here. Tonight's intro songs you heard as we were coming in here, as we fade them back in a little bit. This comes from a Boston, Massachusetts band called Lake Street Dive, named actually after a bar that they used to play at in Minneapolis.
Nice.
Who are releasing this song on their newest album, Good Together, which comes out tomorrow. The song called Dance with a Stranger comes from that album. They're playing in Toronto next Friday, July 28th, at History, a 2,500-seat venue. So if you want to get tickets to go down there, you can find them at 1663 Queen Street East, playing their new songs and some of their old stuff. Self-described as music lovers, the majority of Lake Street Dive formed the band while they attending the New England Conservatory of Music in Boston.
Oh, whoa.
Hold on. It gets even more, a little more crazy here. Their early stuff saw them play country music. But they've come around to admit that they all love the Beatles. And now they describe their sound as, quote, sounding like the Beatles and Motown had a party together, unquote. And you can kind of hear that.
My brain doesn't commute them playing country.
I could not see that either. But you can find their new album, Good Together, at music stores and on streaming services beginning tomorrow. That is, again, the band called Lake Street Dive, excuse me. We fade them out and we start getting into the show here, get everything going. Just want to pass on some news as well, as we unfortunately have to say goodbye to somebody. Want to say, you know, our heartfelt thoughts and memories go out to, or thoughts and prayers go out to the Sutherland family, as Donald Sutherland, the matriarch, or patriarch, excuse me, of the family, Donald Sutherland. Father of Kiefer Sutherland passed away today, unfortunately. Born July 17th, 1935 in St. John, New Brunswick.
Yep.
Passed away today in Miami, Florida. The reason we're talking a little bit about him, obviously he's an icon in Canada. Make no mistake about that. Hollywood icon everywhere in terms of what... His first job, though, at age 14, he was a news correspondent for radio station CKBW in Bridgewater, Nova Scotia.
Yeah, which is incredible. And... I mean, I don't even need to say if you've heard his voice. You've heard his voice, a Canadian icon. I have to believe that even at 14, his voice was perfect for being a news correspondent.
Yeah, I'm sure that they had him on the radio enough that, you know, he...
You hear the guy talk once, and you're like, all right, I just go for it.
So, I mean, a little bit of a sad day because we lost Donald Sutherland today. I mean, fantastic actor as well. He's been in hundreds of things. Mm-hmm. I mean... Some of his best roles, I mean, he was in Backdraft, he was in, you know, Time to Kill, he was in Italian Job, but again, he was in MASH in terms of the movie, he did a lot of stuff.
He did the Hunger Games films recently.
Exactly. I mean, he's quite adaptable to play almost any role and certainly fit in really well no matter where he was. So all of our best to the Sutherland family, because I mean, that's a tough one in terms of losing that kind of guy, so... Mm-hmm. So there we go. Donald Sutherland, the radio voice, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So Lots going on in the hockey world, though, as we previewed on the show preview today on Hockey Blog in Canada. But let's get into the big one, obviously. Last week, we joked that the series may have ended on the weekend, but the Edmonton Oilers seem to be the team that just won't go away as they've won the last two games, pushing the Stanley Cup Final to a 3-2 count now. Connor McDavid seems to have come back to life and is torching the Panthers with his play. 8 points in his last two games, which is ridiculous. He's the first player to go back-to-back four-point games. Gretzky never did that, by the way. And he now
Wayne Gretzky, washed.
Yeah. Well, again, he now has 42 points. He sits back of only three playoff performances in the history of the NHL. That would be Wayne Gretzky. He had 1985 had 47 points. Mario Lemieux in 1991 had 44 points. And then again, that Gretzky guy had 43 points in 87. McDavid's 34 assists, though, were already an NHL postseason record.
Like that guy, this is why, one, this is why he's paid what he's paid, but this is what shows you what a star is supposed to do. When your back is against the wall, he will put you on his back. Like, that's something that, like, not to the level of production that he has, but, like, a Nathan MacKinnon, we know, can do something. Sidney Crosby can do that.
Right.
You know, there are guys.
We said at the beginning of the series, though, when we were previewing it last, like, if Connor McDavid wants, you can't count the Oilers out of any game. As
if
long
he
as
he wants
Connor
to win,
McDavid.
They'll win.
Right. Like, if he puts his mind to it, he'll take it.
Yeah. It was great, the quote from Paul Maurice about him and Dreisaitl. It's like, yeah, you kind of, like, if you see it every day, like, you guys get desensitized to just how good those guys are.
Right, yeah.
They are incredible. And they do it every single shift.
Well, I mean, let's not take anything away from the rest of the team, though. And the Oilers' penalty kill has also shown up again. They have shorthanded goals in back-to-back games, which is the first team to do so since the 91 Penguins in a Stanley Cup final. Again, their penalty kill is starting to look like it was in the first, you know, three rounds over the course of the playoffs there, where they're starting to shut down the Panthers pretty
exactly.
Effectively.
They've responded to that, and I believe, and I brought this up before, Paul Coffey was on that 91 Penguins team.
Yes.
He is basically the defensive coach for the Oilers now, and I think he might be running the penalty kill, which if he is doing that,
it's Mark Stewart. Mark Stewart is running the penalty kill.
But the fact that Paul Coffey has, like, revitalized the defense and is advising all of those players, and they go out and they are matching the performance of the team he was on in 91
when they won the cup. Like, that's nuts. Well, no, I mean, again, Paul Coffey never killed penalties very often, but I mean, every now and then they had him out there just because he could take over a penalty kill, skate for days, right?
Yeah, and there are definitely guys on that team that can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I was doing a little research, though, and this is where things get a little crazy. And for folks that are thinking about, you know, I might want to go to a game in Edmonton.
I know a couple people that are trying to get to games.
They play tomorrow. I might be able to get out to Edmonton if I book a day off. Don't, maybe, because check it on SeatGeek to see exactly how much tickets were for Game 6 in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. If you want to go, there are tickets as low as the lowest priced pair of tickets that I can find will cost you $1,656 each. Each. Not for the pair. Each. If you want to go and get really good tickets, though, you can go get really great tickets because they range up to $14,721 for tomorrow's game.
No, thank you.
Each. if you're thinking about maybe going the other way, tickets to watch the watch party in Sunrise, you want to go down to Florida and watch it. They range from $11 to $44 US.
It's like, hey, do I want to pay a down payment on a house or do I want to go to one Edmonton Oilers game?
You know what? Oilers games don't come around. Oilers list deep in the playoffs don't come around very often, right? So here's the weird part, though, and here's where things get even crazier. Mm-hmm. Say you go down there and you watch the watch party, you spend your $11 and you have a good time. If the series goes to a Game 7, tickets in Florida already start at $1,231 U.S.
Oh, Jesus.
Prices will run you up to $8,925 U.S., and we don't even know if that game's going to take place yet.
Those are going to be, like, if they do get to those tickets are easily going to hit 10 grand.
Oh, for sure. But, I mean, remember how they keep telling us that hockey's affordable?
Oh, yeah.
Tickets to hockey games are affordable. You guys should be able to, if you guys want to support your team, come on out and support them. No.
No.
Obvious question is, does the series end tomorrow night in the Alberta Capitals, Jay? What do you think?
I'm going to be on the side of chaos and fun and say it does not end.
As much as I want to believe that, I think that you're going to see a different Florida Panthers team tomorrow. I think you're going to see a meaner, a far less happy Florida Panthers that they're up 3-0. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see them get, like, they had how much time off between games 5 and 6 now? Mm-hmm. You're going to see a team that's refocused and ready to go tomorrow, I think.
And they are... And
again, take nothing away from Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid could still win that game tomorrow. I'm not saying
they are not happy about having to be... flying back to Edmonton for this game.
And reportedly that they're not happy about being asked how much pressure there is on them to win this game as well. Like, that's apparently bothering them as well.
So. You know who else is probably not very happy? Vinny Viola. for all of the family members to travel with the team just in case they win.
I mean, I guess the only benefit of that, though, is that, I mean, if they do win tomorrow night in Edmonton, I mean, Paul Maurice's daughter can fly back to Winnipeg. She works here, so.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to worry about going all the way back down there. But whatever.
One of the funny things was his son did creative communications at Red River.
Right, yes.
And went to school with Evan.
Well, and I mean, like I said, he's been calling games for the Florida Everblades down there.
That's what we were saying. We were texting when he showed up on the broadcast.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, Evan, your classmate's on TV.
That's fantastic. So there you go. So for those that don't know who Evan is, Evan does our men's hockey here at the University of Manitoba as well with Jason. So catch him all winter long on the... on the fantastic Canada West broadcast. I'm not going to get into
just
that.
Just laugh your way through that statement.
I'm not going to get into that today. The Calder Cup final is also going on right now as well. Looks like another heavyweight tilt between the same two teams who battled last season. As we mentioned last week, the Hershey Bears and the Coachella Valley Firebirds competing for the AHL's top prize. Firebirds currently hold the 2-1 series lead thanks to wins in games 1 and 3. Firebirds captain Max McCormick scored twice in the opening 6:03 on Tuesday night and then added an empty netter with a 1:36 to go for the first hat trick in a Calder Cup Finals game since 2009. Do you know who the last guy was to do that? We talked about this before the show, but do you remember? I mean, you don't have to remember because he didn't.
I know who it is.
But, I mean, it's weird to think that the last time that happened was a guy that did it in this city.
Yeah.
Manitoba moves forward. Jason Jaffrey scored all 3 goals against the Hershey Bears in Game 2 of their Calder Cup Final where Manitoba won 3-1.
Was he also with the team when they're in St. John's and went to the Calder Cup Final?
He may have. I don't know if he went to the Calder Cup Final. He was there for 1 season, I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
The other big improvement from last night, though, Shane Wright looked like he was ready to go. Rookie Shane Wright showed off his skills. He had a highlight reel goal along with 2 assists as the Firebirds took Game 3 by a 6-2 score on Tuesday. Game 4 goes tonight, 7 p.m. Pacific time, if you're looking for a game to watch. So see if you can find the AH. I believe the NHL Network is carrying all the games for this. So if you have that channel, check that out tonight. It'll be a beauty between these two teams. Yeah. Hershey, who won Game 2, looking to bounce back and make this a series as they play all 3 games, 3, 4, and 5, in Palm Springs. So
yeah,
Hershey's got to win at least one of these.
Yes, and I think if Coachella Valley does win, I think it's a great send-off for Dan Bylsma as he makes the transition to the NHL. And I think this performance really shows that you got to think Shane Wright's going to be with the Kraken next year. The coach that he's had success with that knows how to get the most out of him when he's been playing in the AHL, take the step up and start to put those pieces together.
But you wonder, though, how much – and again, I'm not saying this to be facetious towards Dan Bylsma. I know Dan Bylsma's the head coach and he does his own thing and has his own setup and everything in terms of what he looks after.
Yeah.
But you wonder how much Shane Wright, you know – has been affected or has been influenced by the other coaches, specifically when you look at some of the work that's being done by what's her name? Jessica Campbell. There we go. I couldn't remember her first name for a second. I'm like, it's Campbell. What's Campbell's name? But the work done by Jessica Campbell to really get some of those players back onto I don't want to say correct career trajectories, but legitimately Cole Lind, Shane Wright, a couple of the players who went up last year in terms of them going up, like, she's been very instrumental in terms of turning players from could be into probably.
She is. They are very lucky to have her there.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, it was talked about at the time, but I feel like that is one of the those underrated hirings that that franchise has done.
But should we call it underrated though after she worked with the German national team, getting those players
to play
at a higher level?
I think it's underrated in the fact that most hockey fans don't know that.
No, and I get that.
And they're just like, oh, this random person gets hired. Like, why are we making a big deal out of this? And the success that she's had.
She's good at what she does.
Yeah. That's the reason she got the job, is she's really good at it.
Again, we'll have to see what comes out of that. We're only up to game four in terms of what happens in that series, so it still could go anyway. But Coachella Valley looking very good so far. It was a busy day in the NHL yesterday.
Very.
Pile of teams decided to make some interesting roster moves as we kind of shook our heads at a couple. And Calgary, New Jersey got things started off in the morning. Jacob Markstrom was finally traded to the New Jersey Devils after being rumored to be going there forever.
Well, they had a deal in they had the framework of a deal in place.
Right.
He waived his no trade to go to New Jersey. They asked him to waive. He said yes to go to New Jersey, and then the deal fell apart.
Yeah. So Markstrom finally going to the Devils. The return of Kevin Ball and a top 10 protected first round pick in 2025 or 2026 comes back to the Flames. The Flames are also going to eat 31.3% of Markstrom's salary. I don't know how Craig Conroy keeps his job there.
I don't know what he's doing.
The return that they've gotten for Markstrom, Hanifin, Tanev, Lindholm, and Zadorov in the last 4 months,
it's abysmal,
have been less than ECHL standards.
Yeah, it's terrible. Like, they're just clearing house at this point, and you're gonna throw Dustin Wolf in there with nothing in front of him and no support as the new starting goaltender, and like is this really what didn't get across the line
apparently
at the trade deadline? Ball in a top 10 protected first round pick, you're retaining on a contract and not getting an unprotected first round pick.
Nope.
What do you think is going to happen?
But this is Craig Conroy, though, in terms of the way he operates.
It's brutal.
Let's welcome in a guy that we're familiar with. Skippy, how are you, sir?
One thing I heard about this Markstrom thing and what's happening in Calgary, they have in the next 3 years a large number of a large number of first and second round picks, early round picks, to rebuild. And that may be may not be happy in Calgary, but, you know, if they're looking to rebuild, that's they got another first rounder.
Right, but the idea, though, that you're going to rebuild, though, is usually a 3 to 5 year process. So Craig Conroy won't be there that long. I'm sorry to say it, he will not be there that long. So any of the picks that he's making this year may not be even in the plans in 3 to 5 years because the next GM may have a completely different idea.
It might even be longer than 3 to 5 years.
It could
years.
Be, yeah.
Like, if we're looking at how, you know, what the time horizon on, like, even the late, because it's probably, depending on, we look at New Jersey's roster and where we expect that pick is going to land, it's probably going to be a late first rounder when it finally comes around. And is that, and you also have to think about what the return they got. Like, great, they get a first-round pick. They get a prospect.
They can also use those picks to build around a team, right?
Okay, you would hope.
A late first-rounder plus our early first-rounder. We can get someone who can help us now for that first-rounder. You know, similar to the way Montreal threw away the first-rounder they got for, I forget who it was, to get Dvorak. You know, it's like, oh, we got a first-rounder for him. You know, we
want to be a little bit more...
Kotkaniemi. So they lost their first-rounder. They traded. They got one in compensation, and then they traded it for Dvorak, who can come in.
I mean,
you know, that didn't work out exactly the way, but the plan is, like, we're working it. We're working it. We're using our assets, and it's like we've got a young goalie in the system who can come up. We have some young players right now. Let's move with youth, and if we can take a pick to grab some, you know, experience with a contract for a couple of years or, you know, something, I don't think this is a bad move. you know, considering it's even better considering the fact that everybody's kicking the tires on Ullmark, and you know, that was what he was meant. I think Conroy was mentioning that I wanted to get this going before you know, things moved, and maybe I lost this opportunity to get this asset.
I mean, there are some, again, some assets that I would certainly say they, you know, the Flames have. They have 23, they have nearly $24 million in cap space.
Which they can easily
use. Can turn that into something obviously good at that point. But again, Huberto and Kadri are your two top. Mangiapane is your next sort of highest paid player. Mm-hmm. After that, it's a wasteland.
Yeah.
Sharon Govich is okay, depending on who he's playing with. Beyond that, you're maybe looking at Joel Hanley and Mackenzie Weegar as your next best players.
And my thought is, if you're going to commit to a rebuild, first off, what changed between the trade for Huberto to now, where you went from a team that looked like they were going to be in the playoffs, they were going to challenge, they were going to get better. Markstrom was going to carry them forward while Dustin Wolf came up and change things, but then they basically in the space of 12 months sell off a whole bunch of assets, go from a team that was going to try and contend for the playoffs to a team that looks like they're rebuilding while they still have a guy like Huberto on the books, when they've just re-signed Mackenzie Weegar, when they have Nazem Kadri on this long deal. Like, are they going to deal those guys as well? Are they going to continue to clear the cupboards? Or
there are two types of rebuilds too. Like, there's the slow rebuild, and
yeah,
then there's
like the retool.
The retool, which I think, if you're going to retool, you want those extended picks for the next 3 years. While you can give up a couple, you can sign a few things to make a play for the playoffs. Now,
I just unfortunately don't trust Craig Conroy to be able to do a retool properly. Like, with the return that he's gotten on some of these trades, like, maybe Ball turns out to be like a world beater, like an earth shattering pickup at some point.
Come on.
But like, maybe New Jersey just missed something. Like, to me, I don't, based on his track record.
Okay, but you're
I don't see the retool coming.
Sure, but you're picking 9 and 28 this year, in a draft that's not very deep.
Yeah,
in a draft that legitimately has nobody that's going to change the way you're... Sure, you've got 8 picks in the first 4 rounds of your Calgary, but what are you using them on? And what do you need? What do you have to identify? Because you've got holes all over your lineup now.
Wait a second.
But it's hard to fill a draft in the year, you know, right? It's like, none of these players...
It's next week.
No. But these players aren't going to play next year. I mean, it's very seldom that
unless you're Macklin celebrating.
No, yeah, and I'm not saying that, but that's the thing, though, is that if you have a weaker draft class this year, are these players going to be your blue chippers in 2-3 years down the road?
I would go for a trade 1 year in the future, because isn't Gavin McKenna
next year?
So,
well, I mean,
If you're looking to maybe this is a Kevin Conroy masterclass where he's gonna bottom out this team this year, so they get to go in next year with next draft with the first overall pick, and they can grab Gavin McKenna, and maybe that's the turnaround that they need.
I'm gonna put money down that shovels hit the ground for this new arena before they get the first overall pick. Okay. That's how bad it is. But speaking of bad, I mean, Calgary, I can't wait
to just tear into this one.
This one is one that I still can't believe happened. But the LA Kings finally did what we reported a few months back. They dealt the always disappointing Pierre-Luc Dubois to the Washington Capitals for goalie Darcy Kemper. Rob Blake said that Bill Ranford had a big part in this deal, as they see Kemper and Dave Rittich as their tandem next season. Which,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
that's a great tandem. 6 years ago.
I don't even know
how much is left on Kemper's contract.
3 more years.
Yeah.
And there's 6 or 7 on PLD.
7 more.
Yeah. 7 more.
They signed him to a.
And it's like, I think we can agree that both these players could use a change of scenery just because they weren't.
But I don't think it's going to help PLD.
Well, but so Ranford, though, I mean, worked with Kemper before. And that's why they went after him. He actually likes the goalie. He thinks that he's got a lot of potential to come back in terms of bouncing back in his career. Caps GM Brian McClellan, though, kind of fell into the same old, as he kind of repeated the talking points of Kevin Cheveldayoff and Rob Blake, stating, quote, "This acquisition brings in a talented 25-year-old with immense potential to become a top-tier center in the NHL. With his size, exceptional skating, and high hockey IQ, we are confident he will thrive in our organization with increased responsibility and opportunity," unquote.
No, he's got the bag. He's got his big payday. He's not going to do anything probably until the final year of his contract. And
even that's questionable.
Now, if
he's
you look
only
at it,
25. I was just like, really? Yeah. For some reason, I thought he was older because he's been traded.
Not,
so
yeah,
many
not
times.
Yet.
And he's been around
not
so
yet.
Long.
He won't be 25 until June.
Doesn't he turn 26? He's 25 now. Doesn't he turn 26 on
or 26? Sorry, yeah, yeah. On June 24th.
Because that was the issue. Was
A third? If you buy him out, you pay a third as compared to the 2/3. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And the season, the latest the season goes. Is his birthday, so
correct.
You can't. That's when the buyout window opens. Honestly, like looking at this, like aside from the fact that, okay, you look back and suddenly you have traded Gabe Vilardi, Alex Iafallo, Rasmus Kupari, and technically Rasmus Sandin for Darcy Kemper. That aside, this is just Rob Blake saving his job.
Or losing it.
I think this is Rob. I'm not against that idea, but I think this is Rob Blake saving any sort of face he has for the next job he gets as well.
Yeah, because like the other option, like you cannot go into next season with this guy. You can't. They basically needed to pull the move that Toronto needed to move to do last year with Mitch Marner, where so, you need to make the decision. You cannot. You have to do it now. You can't wait to do it because
okay, so there,
they couldn't wait another season for
so
a buyout.
There was a rumor that was going around, and again, this is right after the trade happened. There was a rumor going around that Blake and several other high-ranking Kings officials sat down with Dubois at the All-Star break and said, "You either turn it on now till the end of the season and get us into the playoffs, or we're going to have to make some significant changes."
Mm-hmm.
And Dubois slept walk through the last 4 months or whatever, 4 weeks of the season as well.
Yeah.
He probably didn't like that ultimatum.
No, he doesn't like people telling him what to do.
Went into the playoffs, didn't show up there either. And apparently that was the writing on the wall that the Kings went, "We're making this change whether they like it, whether he likes it or not."
Like,
and
what?
They did it, and they had to do it now because this no trade kicked in on July 1st.
Mm-hmm. Like, what? The audacity and the attitude on this man. Every single time, like the arrogance and attitude that he has, every single time he's been challenged, every single time he's gone into a situation where he has a coach or a GM that tells him, "I need this out of you. I need X out of you. I need Y out of you. I need you to care about the fact that you get paid good money to play professional hockey." He turns around and throws a hissy fit and decides, "No, I'm actually not going to play." You know, John Tortorella tries to tell him what to do and how to play, and he goes in and he puts in that shift. Paul Maurice tries to tell him what to do. Rick Bowness tries to tell him what to do, and he goes and he puts out the effort that he did in Winnipeg, and he does the exact same thing in Los Angeles.
Right, but the catch on all of those is that everybody who has challenged him, doesn't matter who it is, from John Tortorella to Paul Maurice to any GM to whatever, the only time he shows up is when he wants to, and 9 times out of 10 it's in a contract year.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you can say that this is because he went as an 18-year-old straight on to the Columbus Blue Jackets, didn't have a minor league fight for a job.
We do know that organization is not run the best.
Well, yeah, that's an obvious statement.
He went straight 18-year-old and is a major leaguer and never had to fight for. He was always just the
given to him
exactly. Yeah. So it's like that's now, several teams later, it's like I've got my contract.
But again,
I've got my skill.
But when people talk about, and again, I'm not trying to put this on this responsibility on Dubois yet. He's still a young kid, still a young guy. He's got enough time to turn around.
He's 25. His brain's fully developed.
But when people talk about draft busts, like, his name has to be up there with the Diggs and the Patrick Steffens and the... Like, there's no way this guy's getting past
you,
that.
You all named first overalls. He wasn't first overall.
But again,
he's still a top three pick.
Top three pick. And you go...
You know, he's like the Bobby Ryan or the, top three that didn't...
Well, at least Bobby Ryan became an effective player.
But if you do that draft over again, he doesn't even make the first round. That's the problem.
Yeah. So many guys have sailed past him, and I am honestly surprised that at this point, this is strike three. This is three strikes and you're out.
But again, Washington is desperate to find anybody to play center for them as well, though. Like, they are dying to find somebody who can play center alongside Ovechkin and or Oshie.
If I was Brian McClellan, I would go and find something else.
But again, you're desperate, right? You need a high-end center. You need a high-end center player to come in. Again, this is the other problem.
You have Dylan Strome. That's fine. It's enough.
Apparently,
I would rather have Dylan Strome than PLD.
Again, you could have gone.
Dylan Strome shows up.
I'm not going to deny you could have done better though. But baffling for Washington setup in terms of doing this. But the other big moves that happened as we got to get going here. Sharks claimed Barkley Goodrow on waivers from the New York Rangers. We'll get to him in a second. They also acquired Ty Dellandrea from Dallas for Winnipeg's fourth round pick in 2025.
The trade confuses me in the fact that he's still young and he's not reached his full potential yet.
Yeah, Pete DeBoer didn't have a use for him either.
No,
they could not find a spot.
That's the problem.
For him.
I think he got squeezed out of that lineup, and he's going somewhere where he can make a name for. Like, he's going to be beside Macklin Celebrini starting, you know, in October. So maybe he can start turning things around.
Logan Couture.
Yeah.
Didn't they sign the other first?
Will Smith was signed as well.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. They're assembling, Mike Greer's assembling a pretty good young team, and taking a flyer on a guy for a later pick that it's probably not going to turn into anything statistically.
No, yeah.
For a guy that's struggled to find time in a really good, really deep lineup in Dallas, like, that's totally fair.
So the Sharks wanted Goodrow back, apparently, but were not willing to make the trade because...
No. I thought Goodrow didn't want...
Hold on. That's the catch, part of it. The Sharks wanted Goodrow back, and the Rangers were willing to give him up because of his salary, because they need to open up space for July 1st. Mm-hmm. The Sharks did not want to make the trade prior to July 1st because they wanted to see what happens at the draft and go through that, because who knows what kind of opportunities come up there, right? But the Sharks eventually claimed Goodrow on waivers as sort of a nudge, nudge, hint, hint, wink, wink from the Rangers. Like, you can have him if, you know, we'll figure something out down the road. Goodrow reportedly may file a grievance because he's super unhappy about the Rangers putting him on waivers, knowing that San Jose was on his no trade list.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely shady. It is technically
unprofessional,
legal.
Maybe it's unprofessional.
Yeah.
You want to be happy with an organization. What are other players?
And you want a player that wants to play there. Like,
but you also, other players are going to look at that as like, oh, you know, maybe not top of the line players, but you need your role players like Barkley.
Yeah.
Goodrow
had a point, though. He scored 6 goals in the playoffs. Like, he had a terrible regular season, but he showed up when it mattered. Yep. And he thought, what are you doing waving me, number one? And then all of a sudden, what do you mean San Jose wants me? They're on my list.
Yeah. I don't know if it is a situation that we'll see replicated very often because it needs to be a very unique circumstance, because the only reason this worked is because San Jose was first on the waiver wire. So they knew that if they put the claim in, they get the guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know how often this particular situation is going to come about where a team wants to get rid of a guy and another team wants that guy, and they kind of make this handshake under the table deal.
But it's like the waivers in baseball where they waive guys and then all of a sudden a team out of nowhere comes out and picks them up and you're like, what? How did that happen? Like, what's going on here? Sort of thing. So I don't think it should be allowed, but again, CBA rules say it is allowed. Yeah. So you can do that.
If you don't have a no move, then you can't complain about
it. Right. He just had a no trade. So not a no move. Other news out of the NHL, Pascal Vincent was finally relieved as head coaching duties of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's 52 years old. I didn't realize he was that old. 52-year-old went 27-43-12 after the Mike Babcock debacle in the Ohio City. For new GM Don Waddell, though, it seemed like a change was needed. He told reporters, quote, "I found him to be an outstanding person and a smart hockey coach who worked very hard last year under trying circumstances, but I believe a change behind the bench is in our team's best interest." Again, expect the usual suspects to be contacted by the Blue Jackets: Todd McClellan, Jay Woodcroft, Dean Evason, Jeff Blashill, among the many. Before this team can get a coach, though, they need to find an identity as to what they want to be.
I don't know who they are. I don't know what I don't know. Like, I look at the Columbus Blue Jackets and I'm like, what are you?
But if you're hiring a coach to install a culture, you're already like 4 years behind the ball.
You're much further than 4 years behind the ball. Like, this is a franchise that is very well known to be in the middle of nowhere. It's not run properly. There's a culture problem there. Why do players routinely request trades out of there? Like, Patrick Laine is just the latest in terms of wanting out.
There's a lot of extraneous stuff there. Yeah.
But it was a situation where Patrick Laine was perfectly happy being in Columbus, just like he was perfectly happy in Winnipeg. It's quiet, it's small, reminds him of home, nobody bothers him, and he just goes out and he gets to play hockey, go home and play Fortnite at the end of the day. Like, it's the perfect opportunity for him. And now he's gone because
of a podcast.
Yeah.
Don't bother me. And the podcast bothered him.
Yeah, but like, if you're the organization, do you not try and support him through that?
But this is the question then, because Don Waddell has to bring Patrick Laine back.
Because the team has never said anything about that.
No, but that's the thing though, is that Don Waddell has to bring Patrick Laine back at some point if they're going to get any sort of value for him in a trade.
Well, I heard that he's about to be released from the NHLPA program.
Right. Yeah.
And there isn't talk of bringing him actually back into the team. It's they're moving on from him. That's the understanding I've got from social media and online. I don't know what.
But who's going to make a trade for a guy who hasn't played for over half a season and has no interest in playing for the Blue Jackets in the future?
Well, I'm sure there's a team, but you're not going to get much from
that's
it.
What I mean, though.
Like, also,
if you're the Blue Jackets, you've just legitimately burnt an asset that you had for the short amount of time that you've had him in the lineup. He's been effective.
Sometimes that's what you got to do to move on, right? You bring him in, but he's not your guy. He's not going to help. You move on.
Sometimes they
do what's best for the players.
Granted, they could still have Pierre-Luc Dubois.
That's the thing. It's like, look at what Kevin Cheveldayoff did with the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation. It was a guy who wanted out, who picked the spot he wanted to go, and he still got a king's ransom for him.
Literally.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if, because Don Waddell did not steer the ship in Carolina. Let's put our cards on the table. Well, it was Eric Tulsky.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a
and
second.
I don't know if he can make the caliber of trade that an Eric Tulsky would have or a Kevin Cheveldayoff would have, but I do think that there are teams that have assets that are willing to take a chance with where they're at on a guy like Patrick Laine. Like, I'm looking specifically at Seattle because that's reportedly who's the most interested in him. If they can take a flyer on him and bring him in into that organization and that culture, I think that they could turn
it
around.
He'd fit almost perfectly in a situation where he would have, again, zero pressure on him?
Colorado. Winnipeg.
Dallas.
Oh, I was going to say Colorado.
Bring him
With
home.
With all the Finns they have on that team,
that's true.
That guy would thrive there.
Same thing with Colorado, though.
Well, I mean, Colorado's a bit of a different horse as well. You have to show up and play, otherwise MacKinnon will kick your teeth in.
That's true.
But in Dallas, if they can find him a second-line position where he can play alongside a Radek Faxa, for example, all of a sudden that changes everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that to be facetious about where he can or should go. Seattle would be a great place for him as well, I think. But
at the end
of the day, get this guy into a situation with a coach like Pete DeBoer. Mm-hmm. Oh my God! Like, also, you change everything at that point.
How many coaches has Columbus gone through recently?
Far too many.
Because it was Torts, and then there was the guy after Torts that everyone hated,
Brad Larson,
who the fans hated immediately.
And then it was Mike Babcock for 3 weeks, and then it was
Pascal Vincent.
Pascal Vincent.
And now just another guy.
And now another rando.
And that's in the space of, what, 2-3 years?
They're looking for their 11th coach in their 25-year history.
That is insane to me. That is insane. Fire everybody.
Again.
Just gut the organization and start again.
I'm trying to remember. Who was their sister expansion team? Was it Nashville?
No, Columbus and Minnesota.
Minnesota. Yeah. But Nashville came in either the year after or year before.
2 years before.
2 years before. Yeah. And then Nashville's got in their whole span. Two coaches. Yeah.
Which is wild. And two GMs. It's crazy.
No, three, I guess. There would be three because what's his name was there for a short time? Wasn't didn't guy, guy in New York, Laviolette.
Oh yeah, Laviolette was the coach yeah. after Trotz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean still three in 28 years.
Yeah, three coaches, two GMs.
27 years. Speaking of Don Waddell, his assistant GM in Carolina is now officially the guy for the Hurricanes as they promoted Eric Tulsky from to the GM role. Tulsky might be the most anti-old boys club GM the league has ever seen. The Hurricanes now have a guy who, running their team who holds degrees in chemistry and physics from Harvard, and he has his PhD in chemistry.
Yeah.
Dude holds 34 patents.
Smart man.
Guy is a genius. I mean, again, I'm not going to give him too much credit until we see what he does, but he was pretty much running that team down in Raleigh. So.
You look at what he's done since he joined that organization. He's a genius.
Hold on. Came into the press conference, got into it with the report. Not got into it, but got into discussions with reporters about, you know, what they should expect and everything like that. He refused to get into player discussions in the press conference, though. Refused to discuss any players, saying, quote, "It's a complicated offseason. I think we all know that. There are a lot of free agents. We're going to have to work to be creative in solutions to keep the team moving forward," mm-hmm. unquote. Like, refused to discuss any player by name. He was also quick to point out that he won't be the only person making decisions, saying, quote, "I don't think a single decision gets made without at least three people having input, and sometimes 10, unquote.
Mm-hmm. So running the team by committee.
Legitimately, he is collaborative, and he wants input.
Like, as long as he gets the final say.
Which he will. He's the GM.
He's the GM. It's a different situation than something like what happens in Toronto or what happens sometimes in Winnipeg, where the president or the owner gets to come down and say, hey, do this.
But we were saying this before the show. Imagine your GM coming to you as the coach and going, what do you need to be successful?
Yes. That's what
don't give me a list of names. Give me a list of what you want in player traits, and I'll go find those players.
Yes. That's exactly what the relationship should be like, and that's what the relationship in successful organizations has been.
Correct.
We don't have any of this, you know, Mike Babcock with the Leafs where Kyle Dubas would make a trade and then Babcock would just bench that guy or let him sit and, you know, yeah. rot in the press box because he's not happy about it or air his grievances in the media. Like, this is a situation where you've got a that's coach not, who knows what he's
like
doing.
That sounds like Mike Keenan.
Yeah. You've got a guy in Rod Brendamore who knows how to get the most out of his players. Say what you will about their success in the playoffs and the style they play. I've got issues with it. Those guys will legitimately go through a wall for Rod Brindamore, and to know that him and Tulsky will be making decisions together and Tulsky will be listening to what Rod needs is, and, you know, still being that barrier between the team and the owner is everything that you would want.
I mean, defensively, I mean, I know they got to get rid of the 46-year-old or 55-year-old Brent Burns at some point. But, I mean, Jacob Slavin, Brady Shea, like, you've got a bunch of good defenders mm-hmm. that are still there. How they keep all those guys under contract are obviously going to be a difficult task for Tulsky. But at the mm-hmm. same time, though, that's the creative he's looking at as yeah. well. Like, he's got that skill.
And I think one of the things he was referring to was Marty Nečas. And how do you dance around
yeah,
that
it's
situation?
Be tough, yeah, we'll have to see what they do with that. But
how do you address your goaltending issues?
I mean the Kotkaniemi situation as well. How do you justify paying a guy who only scores 14, 15 points a mm-hmm. season? Right?
Yeah. Like, I feel like that was not an Eric Tulsky decision.
No, but at the end of the day, though, he's got to deal with it now, though. So yeah. does he do the buyout? We'll have to see at that point. So. Yeah. Some smaller stories from the NHL. Winnipeg Jets Hockey Club, along with their American Hockey League affiliate, the Manitoba Moose, have announced they extended their partnership with the Norfolk Admirals as the organization's ECHL affiliate for the upcoming 24-25 season. Again, seemed beneficial for the Moose as defender Dmitry Kuzmin, goalies Thomas Milic and Oskari Salminen all played significant minutes in Norfolk. They had guys going up and down all season, so... Mm-hmm. Looks like that's going to be a good situation again for them. And if you missed the leak, you can likely find it somewhere online, but the Anaheim Ducks are definitely going orange next season.
Mm-hmm. And a little tougher on the Ducks, a little tougher.
Yeah. I have to admit that I'm a fan of the jerseys, though, the way they've designed yeah. them. They look good, and
I like the logo. I like the improve yes. on the logo. I'm never a fan of that much orange, you know.
But it's unique. And again,
it reminds me of the horrible football color splash where everybody's wearing the yeah. same.
But color. So I was talking with this about to John though about this John yeah. John who's in Survivor. He's like, hey, what do you think of these? And I'm like, honestly, you can do a color on color with the Kings. You can do a color on color with the Sharks now. You could have all color games against most of the teams in your division just by wearing that orange jersey, because nobody else has anything close to it.
Yeah,
because
you're basically in territory where really only the Flyers live in. But it's a different shade of orange.
Well, again,
you don't play them very much.
You got to watch for the Oilers and the Flames, because they still wear the red and the orange and stuff as well in terms of what's going on. But, I mean, any of those teams up and down the coast, you can basically just take one set of jerseys with you and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, and they're reversing, which was a terrible Brian Burke decision.
Oh, that was brutal.
To move away from the eggplant jersey and go with that black jersey with the duck foot logo and all that other ugly stuff.
I like the duck foot logo. I hope they keep it as a tertiary at least.
If that goes on the sleeves, like up on the shoulder, I have no problem.
Well,
if you look at
the leaks, that's the logo, the shoulder patch. And I think what Aesthetics mentioned in his follow up video on it was that it's staying, but it's being heavily modified.
Right. Yeah. The logo, if you are, again, listening to what we were chatting about, is the Mighty Ducks logo, so it's already a win in my books. Claiming the Mighty Ducks logo in any way is an improvement over that duck foot D. But the orange eyes in the Mighty Duck logo make it a little more intimidating, which, okay, fine, I can live with that.
Moves it away from the Disney era.
I think there's a bit of a brow, right?
They added
a little accent on that, the LA Kings also released their new logo today, and it reportedly took them more than 2 years to come up with a new font, a drop shadow, and to reuse the crown from the old gold jerseys of the 60s and 70s. It took them 2 years to basically find a font, add some color, and pull out an old logo.
Like, you just highlight the Los Angeles. Yeah, you do Control B, and it makes it bold. New logo.
Again, I don't know what LA's doing. They haven't released their jersey yet. They're apparently going to have that coming up in the next couple of days, so keep an eye out.
It's just going to be the Gretzky era jerseys.
Oh, it's probably going to be, but yeah. According to the release put out by the Stena-line Belfast Giants, never, ever going to repeat that again. According to the release put out by the Belfast Giants, the Giants will play the OUA Carlton Ravens on Friday, August 30th at 7 p.m. local time at the SSE Arena Belfast before taking Saturday off, to watch Carlton and the Alberta Golden Bears tangle at 7 p.m. local time. And then on Sunday, they'll be back to play the Alberta Golden Bears at 4 p.m. local time, which should be a fun weekend for all three teams. That Sunday game should just be a blast. Mm-hmm. Ravens head coach Mark Cavillin is a Belfast Giant from 2000 to 2002, while Golden Bears general manager Stan Marple spent 10 years skating for the Guildford Flames over in the Elite Ice Hockey League. Giants finished third place last season, 28-15-4-7 record, before falling in the EIHL championship to the Sheffield Steelers. They're already retooling, though, and they are building up a solid team. Now, for those that don't know, Belfast is a perennial
contender.
Right. They are a fantastic team. They're the most successful British professional hockey team that's over there.
They won the doubleheader a couple years ago. They won the Challenge Cup and they won the playoff trophy.
Six-time regular season champion as well. Here's what they've done so far in terms of attracting talent. They went out and signed former Detroit Red Wings goaltender Tom McCollum. They added UND standout and Milwaukee Admirals forward Grant Mismatch. They added former UMD Bulldogs and former NCAA champion Kyle Osterberg. Jack Cassetti and Zach Galambos from Western Michigan University both signed with the club 2 weeks ago. And then former Saskatchewan Huskies defender Josh Roach joined the Giants recently as well.
They are going to be a wagon.
They are going to be very good.
It's going to be them and Sheffield in the finals again. Like, I'm just like marking that down now.
Well, okay, come on. Glasgow's got Mike Sarant behind the bench. What are you talking about?
No comment.
We'll just leave that alone. PWHL Montreal captain Marie-Philippe Poulin received an important honor yesterday. She received the Ordre National du Québec. The order honors those who have contributed in their own way to shaping Quebec since its creation in 1984. We do have a bit of a clip for this where the guy goes all bonkers over how good she is. Here's the clip here.
Madame Marie-Philippe Poulin.
So there's a big handshake. She comes up. She's already looking like half like, I don't want to do this. I'm a little embarrassed sort of thing or whatever. And then he goes on this clip that, I mean, is only a minute long that I basically wore. It was like a 5 minute clip of him talking about how good she was. So.
Un grand admirateur. Quelle marqueuse extraordinaire. Faut que soyez plus proche de moi.
Marqueuse extraordinaire. I can figure out what that is.
She's a best scorer.
Yeah.
médaillée olympique. Pour moi, vous êtes la meilleure joueuse de hockey au monde. Yeah. J'irai jusqu'à là.
She's got a big hand for being the best women's hockey player than in his view. Mm-hmm. At the end of the clip, though, he basically says in French that, you know, because of her, far more kids in Quebec are playing hockey, and that's why she's receiving the order. Yep. And I think that's a huge honor for her to to sort of have that, I mean, you know, attached to her name, which is kind of nice. So congratulations to Marie-Philippe Poulin on that. We're going to keep going. IIHF handed out his Player of the Year Award for the second time in its history earlier this week. For those who don't know about the award, the criteria to win it is both competing in at least one IIHF tournament at any level during the year, as well as in a domestic league of the highest caliber for that country, while exemplifying skill, determination, team success, and sporting character both on and off the ice. On the men's side, Czech forward Roman Červenka, Czech goaltender Lukas Dostal, Swiss forward Kevin Fiala, Swiss defender Roman Josi, Swedish defender Erik Karlsson, and Canadian forward John Tavares were all in the running. You already know who won. Skippy, you want to take a shot at who won this this award? Player of the Year, according to the IIHF. Just before you answer, voting was done by more than 100 media from the top 22 nations in the Men's World Championship Program for 70% of the vote, while people from the IIHF made up the other 30% of the vote.
No, I international stuff. I'm not sure who would be on that list.
So again, Roman Červenka, Lukas Dostal, Kevin Fiala, Roman Josi, Erik Karlsson, and John Tavares were the nominees.
I can tell you, it's not John Tavares.
It's not John Tavares.
I mean, I'm leaning towards Karlsson just because of out of popularity.
Not Karlsson, but the 2024 winner, apparently in the closest vote ever. There's only been two. In the closest vote ever was Roman Červenka, who received 31.3% of the vote to Yossi's 30.3%. I would have picked Josi.
Yeah.
Norris Trophy nominee and led his team back to the playoffs after it looked like they were dead in the water. So I don't understand how Červenka wins that.
And won a silver medal.
Well, yeah, that won the silver medal at the IIHF, yeah. Women had seven players in the running. German goaltender Sandra Abstrider, American forward Alex Carpenter, American forward Kendall Coyne Schofield, Finnish defender Jenny Herakoski, Swiss forward Alina Mueller, Canadian forward Marie-Philippe Poulin, and Canadian forward Natalie Spooner were all finalists. Anyone shot on that one, Skippy? You want to take that one?
I'd say Spooner.
Okay.
I already know who it is.
Oh, yeah, you know. The winner actually was Natalie Spooner. You are correct. She won Player of the Year after she captured 33.6% of the votes. Second place was Alex Carpenter with 14.6% of the votes.
So also
she was
very deserving.
Again, had a baby, came back and led the PWHL in scoring, and then went off and won a gold medal with Canada as well. She had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
Pretty good year as a mom. That brings us to Spooner's next honor. She was named as the PWHL Toronto, PWHL Toronto Star, excuse me, was named as the 2024 PWHL MVP. I will never call it the Billie Jean King, or Billie King Jean, whatever, Billie Jean King MVP Award. I'll never speak of that again. Spooner, though, had an incredible season. She led the PWHL in goals. She was the only player to reach the 20-goal plateau. She finished the season atop the scoring leaderboard with 20 goals and 7 assists, 4 points better than teammate in second place Sarah Nurse. Her 7 power play goals were also a league best. She had 1 shorthanded goal, and she sat for just 4 minutes in penalties this season. So definitely well-deserving for the MVP award as well. NHL Awards, the next major hockey ceremony that takes place, that'll happen at the Fontainebleau in Las Vegas on June 27th. Hosting the ceremony that evening will be comedian and impressionist Matt Friend. For those that don't know who Matt Friend is, that's okay. He's done a couple of voices on The Simpsons, not very many. He was only on 2 episodes. He was also in Good Burger, too. But if you know anything about The Howard Stern Show, you know who Matt Friend is. Here is Matt Friend being introduced by Howard.
I'm listening to a tape of this kid who does an impression of me. And now I'm here, when I'm talking, I hear I sound like the guy. This kid's name is Matt Friend.
We had Dana Carvey, one of my favorites, on as a guest. And we were talking about how nobody does a good impression of me. Even on SNL, nobody's been able to do it. Now, there's this one guy who's 23 years old. He does an impression of me on TikTok, whatever you want to call it. I think it's okay. I mean, I don't think it sounds much like me.
Then all of a sudden I was talking, and I said, I kind of sound a little. I can hear it a little bit. All right.
So that's how Matt Friend got sort of into the spotlight. He was doing impressions of all sorts of people, got on there with Howard Stern or whatever. So, and that's not how he got onto the, obviously, the NHL awards, but I mean, he is a good comedian, great impressionist. So
got to start on TikTok.
Who's the musical guest? That's where I've heard Matt Friend from. I was like, yeah, I knew the name, but I couldn't place him.
Yeah.
Is there a musical guest this year?
They have not named anybody yet. Okay. So we'll have to see who they have there. Speaking of TV, season 10 of The Amazing Race was announced on Tuesday. There may be a reason for me to watch this season. Beginning on Tuesday, July 2nd at 9 p.m. Eastern, host John Montgomery will guide 11 teams through various Canadian communities. One of those teams will feature a guy that we know very well, and here's why. Let's see if we can get this on for you. That's right, folks. Brad May will be one of the contestants on the Amazing Race Canada this year. It's him and his daughter, Sam, who's 24 years old, will team up in an effort to try and win the Amazing Race Canada. So congratulations to them, and we'll keep an eye on what they do.
May's in his early 50s at this point, right?
52. Mm-hmm. He's 52, yeah. It is yet to be posted anywhere on their website, which is kind of Manitoba Female Hockey League for you. But in the meantime, big recognition goes up to Brandon's sons, Jules Xavier, for announcing that Brandon will finally get a U18 AAA girls team, as the Brandon Wheat Kings will play next season in the Manitoba Female Hockey League. Not only that, but Wheat Kings will be led by an incredible person and an even better hockey mind. Former Bison sniper Carissa Kirkup will be the first head coach in history. The addition of the Wheat Kings pushes the Manitoba Female Hockey League to 9 teams. Kirkup, in my view, is the right choice, though. She spent the last few seasons coaching the U15 level, where she led the under-15 Wheat Kings to their third consecutive championship in the 17-team Winnipeg under-15 AAA Hockey League this past spring.
She is an incredible hockey. Like, she's great at player development as well.
Yeah.
Like, she's probably going to be coaching a lot of the players that she got into up to the U18 level, and basically going all the way back to her playing days. Like, she's an incredible hockey mind.
We're going to finish this show off. We got about a minute to go here. A fun little story from Guelph, Ontario. For those that don't know, former Winnipeg Jet centerman Brian Little is now doing something entirely different with his life. He retired from the NHL. He was going to be a stay-at-home dad, but his wife said he couldn't sit around and do nothing. So Brian Little is now doing triathlons following his retirement. He was a fourth-place finisher at the Milton Subaru Triathlon at the beginning of the month, and he was registered and finished as a top amateur. And he plans on competing in next month's Ironman 70.3 Muscleman in Geneva, New York. 70.3 being the number of miles you have to complete in an Ironman triathlon. So congratulations to Brian Little. That's awesome.
Just one of those guys that cannot sit still.
I mean,
cannot.
He said that biking was the way he sort of got his mind off of, you know, trying to, you know, figure out what he's going to do after. And then all of a sudden he started falling. And then he's like, you know what, I'm going to try swimming as well. It got into the swimming and then added the running at the end. So he's now a triathlete. So there you go. Skip, you've got to get going, though. You're going to get on here next as we get set and ready to go here. Jason, anything you want to say before we go?
Just, you know, hope everyone, don't forget their sunscreen with all the beautiful sun, and gets outside this weekend.
It will not last.
It will not.
I mean, it's supposed to get warmer again next week around here. We're talking 30s next week for Manitoba, for Winnipeg at least anyway. So we'll see if we can keep it warm. But
sunburn on my birthday. Let's go.
Let's try and have a good weekend, everybody. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio coming up next with Skippy, as we just said. NHL playoffs may end tomorrow night, so keep an eye on that as well. If we do, we got Survivor stuff to do next week. Other than that, we'll be back next week on Thursday. We'll see you then, folks. Have a good one. Everybody, enjoy the playoffs. Don't stop the rocket to the bang bang boogie. Say up, up the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to be. Now what the hell is to the taste of ripping to the bee? Covering all genres of music, including Swedish remakes of Rapper's Delight, you're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg. I'm a friend, you're gonna try.